done on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Catherine Switzer is our guest today. She is known as the woman who challenged the all-male tradition of the Boston Marathon and became the first woman 45 years ago to officially enter and run the event. You'll hear about what happened when one of the race officials discovered that, oh my gosh, a woman was running in the Boston Marathon. She was, that official tried to forcibly remove her from the race. And it's quite a story. We'll hear about it in just a moment. Catherine went on to do a number of things. She has run 35 marathons. She won the 1974 New York City Marathon. She has inspired women all over the world to run, and she has created programs, actually, in 27 countries for over 1 million women that led to the inclusion of the Women's Marathon as an official event in the Olympic Games. She has written widely. She announces the marathon. I don't know if she's going to do that on Monday or not, but perhaps she is. Her story has been featured on documentaries, and she is with us this hour of the program to talk about her running and women in sports. She is the author of Marathon Woman, Running the Race to Revolutionize Women's Sports. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And we're doing, this is a new idea. I think it's kind of cool. We're doing this Facebook question, too. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And here's what we're asking you on Facebook. And if we get really good comments, we'll read those on the air. The 25 sexiest women in sports, if you can believe it, was the second return when we searched the internet for women in sports today. We asked on our Facebook page, how far do you think women's sports have come in the last 45 years? And why would the 25 sexiest women in sports come up number two when you do a search on this? We may have a long way yet to go. Catherine, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, lovely to have you here. What a story 45 years ago. I mean, what a day in your life, wasn't it?
It really was. You know, it was a day that changed my life completely. And, you know, it was a funny thing because 45 years ago, I was only 20 years old, and I just entered the Boston Marathon because it really was a reward from my coach because he didn't believe, like so many people, that women could run the full 26-mile, 385-yard marathon distance. And when we argued about it, he said if I showed him in practice that I could do the distance, he'd be the first person to take me to the Boston Marathon. So indeed, we did a few weeks before the Boston Marathon run, not only 26 miles, but we ran 31 because I was absolutely sure we had mismeasured our course. And at the end of our workout, my coach passed out.
Oh, my goodness.
And when he came to, he said, women have hidden potential in endurance and stamina, which is something I knew all along. Anyway, and true to his word, he was so proud of me, he insisted I sign up for the Boston Marathon. So it was there as a I went as a reward, you know, from him. And also because it was the greatest open marathon and amateur race in the world. And, oh, my God, you feel so heroic when you run Boston. But I wasn't there to prove anything, you know? And it wasn't until the official attacked me. You told the story at the beginning, but when the official attacked me at 2 miles, that my whole life really changed.
Yes, and tell us about that moment, because it was dramatic. I can't believe that guy did that to you. Why didn't he wait at least until the end of the race to say, excuse me, you shouldn't be in here, and then you could have had a debate, but he really could have hurt you.
Well, yeah, he did. He physically attacked me. He grabbed me by the shoulders and spun me back and screamed at me, get the hell out of my race and give me those numbers. Well, what had happened is that, you know, we lined up with the start of the race and the gun went off. And at the start, you really couldn't tell. I wasn't disguised, but you really couldn't tell. The guys could tell, but that from a distance that I was a woman because it was snowing and sleeting. It was the worst day in history for the weather, the Boston Marathon. And it was a headwind. It was terrible. Oh. And the snow was coming down. And it was the kind of snow that landed on your shoulders but wet your clothes. And you were very bitterly cold in April snow. And the officials were so frantic, they were just pushing us into the starting area. So here I was, all bundled up in a sweatsuit, just like one of the guys. And he didn't see me then. And my coach said, see, there's no problem. And because I was worried, you know, that maybe that there'd be some rule or something against women not being allowed to run in the Boston Marathon, even though we'd gone through the rule book.
There wasn't anything in the rules.
Nothing.
Was
and there was nothing on the entry form about gender. See, nobody believed a woman could do this anyway.
Right.
And although, I tell you, a woman had run it the year before. She jumped out of the bushes and ran the race and ran well. And everybody, the officials just kind of poo-pooed it, you know, and my coach didn't believe it, and that's a shame because she did run it. But anyway, I wasn't trying to prove anything. And then at 2 miles, when the press truck went by, it's when the official was on this truck, and the guys on the truck were teasing him and saying, oh, there's a girl in your race, you know, she's wearing numbers. And he lost his temper. And, you know, I've been a race director myself, and you're frantic, and you hate people who come into your race and make a clown of your race. And that's obviously what he thought I was doing. And instead of taking me seriously, he just jumped off the truck right alongside, went after me and grabbed me. And, you know, my coach was screaming, leave her alone. She's okay. I've trained her. But the funny part in the retelling of this story, it wasn't funny at the time, but my boyfriend was running alongside of me, and he was only in the Boston Marathon because if a girl could run it, he could run it.
Mm.
We'd had an argument about that. Mm. He was an ex-All-American football player and hadn't run more than a mile in his life. But when the official attacked me, my boyfriend smacked the official with the most beautiful cross body block and sent him out of the race. Well, the race director did this in front of the press truck.
Oh.
As you said, why didn't he wait till the finish? He did it in front of the press truck. And so the pictures of all this were captured and flashed around the world. Before he finished the race, they were on the cover of every major newspaper around the world. And that is what changed my life, really, that photograph. Otherwise, this might be just a footnote in history. Although he did radicalize me, I went on and finished the race. And I can tell you, I was one very first embarrassed and scared young woman, and then very angry. And then you can't stay mad when you run 26 miles. And the anger dissipated, and I just got resolved. By the time I finished the race, kind of I had a life plan in front of me. Mm. You know,
so what happened to the boyfriend? Did you turn his thoughts around about
Well, we had
women?
Another argument because, you know, he said he was never going to make the Olympic team because of me, and I was getting him in all kinds of trouble. And
So,
I mean, I got to tell you, I had epiphany after epiphany in this Boston Marathon.
I guess.
He was reduced to walking, unfortunately, and so I beat him by an hour and a half, but I have to hand it to him. I mean, the guy weighed 235 pounds. He still finished. So that's partly the end of that story.
Where did we get this idea? And it wasn't, what always strikes me, Catherine, it wasn't very long ago that we held these ridiculous beliefs that women could only run for a mile and a half, that they didn't have the stamina for it, they were going to ruin their reproductive cycles, etc. Who gave us all that information that was so wrong?
Well, you'd like to think it was the Victorians, but can I tell you, it's still very prevalent today. I mean, when you look at when organizing races, as I have in, let's say the Philippines, Malaysia, in South America, and God love them, the Mideast, forget it. I mean, it's the protection and the subjugation of women is so unbelievable. And people not only have the latent fear that women will become men or somehow masculinize themselves, it's also really... there's a subtext here, which is that women who run are free and they're powerful and they're empowered and they have a sense of their own destiny and control. And that's why running has become so popular in the United States now among women, actually in North America. Wait for it. In my lifetime, already there are more women runners now in North America than men.
There are.
There are 53% of the runners in the United States are women.
Interesting.
And in the Boston Marathon, where, you know, you have to even qualify, and it's so hard for everybody because, you know, we're all time constrained and everything, and the amount of mileage you have to do that is enormous. Still, we're up to about 48% women in the Boston Marathon, and there are many marathons, let's say the Phoenix Rock and Roll Marathon, where they're something like 75% women.
Mm-hmm. Now you, which I think is just phenomenal, put together races in countries all over the world, and you were responsible in large measure for this to become an Olympic sport.
You know, Kathleen, after I told you, after Boston, I was very radicalized by this experience, and I was not only mad at Jock Semple, the official who tackled me, and then I realized he was just a product of his time. He's a man who believed those old myths about, you know, you're probably going to grow hair in your chest and your uterus is going to fall out if you participate in sports. But a lot of women believe those myths, and that angered me. And then I said, well, wait a minute, you're just lucky. You know, you're here because you've had encouragement and opportunity. So other women would run if they had opportunity. And it occurred to me, if I could organize the events to showcase the women and get major sponsorship and make it glamorous and get it on television and get it around the world, these women would come out in droves. Well, they did, in their thousands. And in fact, I wound up organizing 400 races in 27 countries, and over 1 million women participated. It was the Avon International Running Circuit. And with the data and the international representation, we were able to present that to the International Olympic Committee, and especially the Los Angeles Olympic Organizing Committee, and got the women's marathon instated into the Olympics officially for the 1984 Games. And it's very hard to realize now, there are many women I'm meeting, some of them who are even 40 and 50 years old, who believe that the marathon has always been a part of the Olympic Games for women. and they go, really? There's this whole history that we weren't allowed to run? And it was so important to get it into the Olympic Games because, as you all know, we all aspire to something higher. When we're given official status, we rise to the occasion, whether it's the vote or whether it's the Olympic Games. And so when we got the event into the Olympic Games, I realized that world thinking about women's limitation and supposed fragility would change as soon as that first woman came through the tunnel and into the Olympic Stadium. And that's exactly what happened because of the power of television. You know, that moment was beamed around the world, and everybody said, oh, my God, if that woman can run 26 miles that fast, you know, they can do anything. Hello.
Right. Hello is right. And you must be so struck by those stories that made it to the front pages around the world, the one that you just talked about, and you must think frequently. I can remember the other story, and it was my story back in 1967.
Yes, but you know, it was interesting. That was a very negative thing, and a lot of the time when I do public speaking, one of the things I talk about is sometimes the greatest negatives in your life can give you the greatest positives and the greatest inspiration.
I believe that.
And so, I mean, I could have walked off that course and been bitter for the rest of my life,
right,
and hated that official.
Right.
Instead, I said, okay, you know, this is a negative. That means there's an opportunity here to create these opportunities. And so I did. And amazingly enough, 6 years later, that old official and I became best of friends. So, you know, what goes around comes around. And I, you know, by doing that, I also, you know, launched a whole career of creating international races. And then that spawned a career in broadcasting. You know, earlier, you know, you're introducing me, you said I was on my way to Boston. In fact, I'm packing up right now and looking at my start list because I am doing, wait for it, my 33rd consecutive broadcast of the Boston Marathon.
Great. That's wonderful.
That is
wonderful.
Yeah.
Tell me, before we start taking phone calls, just this whole process of running, too. I tried it once. I'm a swimmer. That's the only thing I know how to do. It. I tried to run, and my friend and I, this must have been back in 1979, I bought a bag of jelly beans, and so the goal was to finish the run and then go eat the jelly beans, and it was the only thing that kept me running. But I just could never do it because it seemed hard to me. I understand that there are strong people who can do this, but it must be hard. Isn't it hard to run a marathon, Catherine?
A marathon is hard. It's a long way. I mean,
right, that's a long way.
I mean, it takes you a half an hour driving your car at 60 miles an hour.
Oh.
So if you're going to run it, it takes a long time. But the amazing thing is, Kathleen, anybody can do it. I've seen people without legs do it. I've seen people in wheelchairs. I mean, and all shapes, sizes, and ages, okay? The thing is you just put one foot in front of the other and you go longer, you know, every day or every week,
mm-hmm.
and you can build up. It's just, it's really, really quite phenomenal. The capacity for human achievement is just amazing. Having said that, Kathleen, you know what? It's not for everybody. You know, like you like to swim. I hate swimming.
Mm.
You know, could I learn and could I work at it? Probably. But why do, I mean, if I don't want to, It's like a torture. But many, many people love running because actually it's a very simple thing to do. All you need is a pair of shoes. And basically, for women, it is particularly wonderful because they can fit that in around jobs, kids, dogs, houses, husbands, everything. You can squeeze in 10 minutes here, half an hour there. And pretty soon the mileage builds up, and they are running a local 5K charity run, and then they 2 years later they qualify for the Boston Marathon. So it all happens. And what is amazing is that sometimes, you know, women who say, "Oh, I'm just going to run to get out of the house and lose 5 pounds and just shake off some of this domestic dust or something," and suddenly they realize this is a moment of real clarity, and they're alone, they can get fresh air, they start sorting out their thoughts, and they pile on the mileage, and they feel so confident and empowered. It really changes much else in their lives that's good. You know, they're maybe sick of their jobs, and they say, "Hey, if I can get up at 6 in the morning and run 10 miles, I can change my job." So, you know, things like that really, really translate, you know.
You make me feel like turning this old radio off and hitting the streets. You really do. I'm ready.
Well, you
I'm
know
ready.
What? Another thing is maybe it was uncomfortable for you because you were going too fast.
No,
I just tell
be.
People, you know, if they said, "Oh, gosh, I just can't do it." I said, "Slow down and walk." And then shuffle a little bit and walk again.
Okay.
Hey, Kathleen, one other thing that's really fun. This year in Boston, we're celebrating not only my 45th running of it, but the 40th anniversary of women being official. It took us 6 years, and we finally got women official in 1972. And so this year, what a year it is, not only 40th of women official at Boston, but that opened the floodgates for the first ever women's road race, and then, of course, the passage of Title IX Amendment in June of 1972. So it's a whopper of a year for celebrations for women.
It is a whopper. A whopper of a year. That's what we're talking about with, in terms of women and running, Catherine Switzer and Women in Sports, author of Marathon Woman, Running the Race to Revolutionize Women's Sports. She is, again, many, many years of announcing the race, and she has run in many of them, including being the first woman to enter the Boston Marathon as an official participant back in the year 1967. It was a moment that, as you've heard her say, completely changed her life and changed the lives of would-be runners, female runners, all over the world. Here's our phone number. We're asking, and there are a lot of you who run and who know about Catherine's story. We'd love to hear from you. We've also asked on our Facebook page, these are kind of fun to go to as the show is going on or when the show is over, how far do you think women's sports have come in the last 45 years? Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email address, you can use that as well, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Catherine Switzer, our guest, talking about this whopper of a year for female athletes. Boston Marathon is this Monday. She'll be announcing it. And isn't it something? In 1967, she was the first woman to enter the Boston Marathon as an official participant. And the men who were running the race didn't like that one bit. No siree. We go to phone calls. We have all four lines going. Pat at Cornell. Hi, Pat. Hi, Pat. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go right ahead, sir.
I just want to comment a couple things. One, my wife started running about a year and a half ago at the age of 54.
Ooh.
And she's up to playing on a half marathon this year. And she's talked me into running with her, but not quite that far. And then the other comment I had is I remember women's sports. There wasn't a women's sports available when I was in high school. And I happen to remember a girl that was very athletic, and it's just a shame that she never had the opportunity to participate in sports, and it's such a wonderful thing to have that available for women today. That's just my comments. I'll take anything off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Pat. Catherine.
Yeah, you know, what's really amazing is how many women are really starting to run late. You know, 54, I'm meeting women 65, 70, even 75 years old who are starting to run for the first time. I tell you, they're good. And you wonder what they could have been if they had opportunities when they're younger. The point is, it's never too, as George Eliot said, it's never too late to become what you might have been. And some of these women may have old bodies, but they got new legs. and they really are doing amazing things. So, you know, here's his wife. She's 54. That's terrific. She's going to run a half marathon this year. That's terrific. And, and it is a shame, you know, the women who missed out on a sports opportunity at an earlier age.
When we talk about the anniversary of Title IX as well, what an instrumental thing that has been in changing young girls' lives all over this country. I am still, because I'm old enough to remember that we didn't have anything. We just had nothing. And to look at girls' soccer teams now and basketball teams and see them on television, I'm still awestruck by that, Catherine. I really am.
Title IX, you know, it still has some kinks that need to be worked out, I think. But basically, can I tell you, it's changed the landscape entirely. There's not a young girl should grow up in this country with a sense of limitation from sports, you know, because Title IX has changed all that. It's been phenomenally wonderful.
And to watch young males, adolescents, look at the girls' basketball games and the soccer games, it's just a whole different way of viewing women, young women. They love it, they watch it, they cheer. It's just, what a sight to behold.
Absolutely, and you and I can remember when we played sports, the guys would sit on the sidelines and go, nah, 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 nah.
Right.
You know, but
right.
They have it has engendered tremendous, tremendous respect.
Yes.
Which
yes.
is wonderful. One of the things I see differently now, let's say at a marathon expo and all these thousands of people are coming through, a couple will come through and he'll say, I'm running Boston, but she's running New York. So I'll watch the kids when she runs New York. She watches the kids when I run Boston. Hmm. And they talk about changing off their training times. So it's never that he has first choice anymore. It's that they completely work together. And there's no sense of lack of equality in it. It's not that one is better than the other. They're equal. It's wonderful to see that in relationships.
Is it really a solitary endeavor, Catherine, or do you know a lot of people who run together? Or is it something you just do for yourself and you don't need anybody else?
No, I think one of the best things is when you can get out and run with your group. I prefer to run alone because I have a lot of people around me all the time, and I just use that as my alone thinking space time. And also because in my early years, you know, there was so much, I didn't have anybody to run with for many, many miles. So I'm used to running alone. But, gee, it's fun to run with people, yeah. But in the end, when you're in a marathon, you may be surrounded by 30 or 40,000 people, but still it's your own internal competition against yourself. Everybody wants to do a personal best, a PB, you know, and they want to improve their time.
Let's go to Katie in Muckwonago. Hi, Katie.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Catherine, I just wanted to thank you for your tireless efforts because I'm 36 and women of my generation have seen the work of people like you pay off because I grew up as an avid athlete. I competed as a swimmer throughout college. I run marathons. I do triathlons. And it's just an amazing part of my life, and I feel so sad that my mom did not have those opportunities when she was my age.
Mm. Well, thank you, Katie. It's really wonderful and very validating to hear that. That's absolutely tremendous, but I'm sure your mom is very proud of you and can kind of, you know, live vicariously. So, you know, that's really great. And you know, probably of her generation, she probably wasn't pining too badly because, you know, a lot of others weren't doing it, so We can, but just change the landscape for the future.
Thank you for the call. Jane in Menominee, hi.
Hi, thank you for this program. It's wonderful. I've been running since I was 29. I'm now 62.
Ooh.
Qualified for Boston when I turned 50 and qualified by 40 seconds. So said, we're going, and everybody in the family agreed. And I have to agree with your guest about empowerment. What I really learned from my running is that if there's anything in life that I want to do, I can plan for it and I can make it happen.
Mm.
The other comment I have is family. I ran my first marathon with my son when he was a junior in high school. And now my daughter is, so I have both of my children run marathons. And my granddaughter, when she was 2 years ago, ran her first half marathon in an all-girls marathon or a half marathon type thing. So it's a real family event. It brings the family together. And it's just so empowering to know that you do have control in your life and that planning and work pays off.
Hmm.
Thank you.
You know what? I want to salute you because you did this. And you provided for them a lifelong role model. So these kids now, your own children and grandchildren growing up, seeing that this is just a lifestyle, it's a part of your life, and those kids are going to be the healthiest kids. They're not going to be overweight. They're not going to be at risk of diabetes, and they're going to reduce their risk of heart attack by 45%. So, I mean, that's huge. That's our big killer. And so congratulations to you. You've done a wonderful job with the family.
Oh, I loved hearing that story, Jane.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good
Thanks
day.
For the call. What do you have to do to qualify for the Boston Marathon, Catherine?
Depends on your age. You know, there are different standards for men and different standards for women. But so, for instance, if you're a 65-year-old woman, you have to run the Boston Marathon faster than, I believe, 4 hours and 50 minutes. And if you're a 25-year-old woman, what's the entry now? I think it's about 3:40, 3 hours and 40 minutes. For men, it's down around 2:50. So you have to – it's beyond jogging. you have to do the training. And it's – and the reason Boston is so alluring is because people have to train up for it, and they have to make the commitment to get faster and get better. Whereas other marathons, let's, you know, just say these – many of them around the world, you know, Chicago, Phoenix – San Diego, all you really need to do is pay your money and pin on a number and go out and do it.
Uh-huh. And in terms of training, how long, I think somebody mentioned a year and a half they were training. How long do you have to train for such a huge event?
Of course, that's totally variable. I mean, are you overweight and a smoker? It's going to take you a lot longer than if you're 22 years old and have a good sports background, okay?
Yeah.
But basically, I always say, you know, give it a year for a marathon, because you need to get the mileage up there, and you need to get it so you can cover 20 miles without really being fatigued at the end. And then after that, you can hang on for the last 6 usually. Or I used to always train the full distance. And so basically it's a commitment of time. You know, I would say it's at least 4 or 5 runs a week, and certainly once every week to 10 days, a long run, which is longer than you've done before, up to about 20, 22 miles.
Mm.
It's a commitment of time.
Yes.
That's why it's interesting. Jane, who just phoned in, said that her granddaughter is running an all-women's half marathon. These are extremely popular distances, so 13 miles for women, because you still get the buzz of doing a very long run, a buzz of being in a real fun atmosphere. But the commitment to do that extra amount of mileage, which takes so much time, and you're tired afterwards, so you have a lot of recovery time needed. You know, that some of us just don't have that time when we've got a big family.
Right, exactly. Exactly. And jobs.
And jobs,
you name it. Jane, thanks for the call. Carrie in Superior. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Thank you for having me on the air.
Sure.
I was just calling because my daughter is a runner, and my son is also. She's been running since, about third grade, and last year she ran in the state meet, Wisconsin state meet. She was 14th in the state.
Mm.
And I was just wondering if you had any advice for us. And now that my kids have running, they've inspired us to run. So
I love that. My advice for the kids is to keep it fun. You know, don't just drill into them. You got to run today. You know, because you know, they're looking at a lot of pavement, and sometimes it's not too fun when they get to be about 16. They'd really rather go out and go to parties and things like that. But to keep it in perspective, and also to expose them to other sports too. Running is a great base for everything: soccer, lacrosse, basketball, whatever. And so that it's fun and it's in perspective, but the whole family doing it also makes it fun, because you can go to events together, and then chat about it afterwards.
What's this buzz you talk about when you finish a marathon? A couple questions: is that a mental thing? Are you sort of euphoric? And physically, what do you feel like when you've run all those miles?
Well, you know, there really is a very big buzz after you run, and that's one of the reasons I think we all do it.
Mm.
You as soon as you get fresh air and you get air over your brain and you get your heart pumping, you release a lot of mood enhancing things that are called endorphins, and it just gives you a sense of well being, a sense of accomplishment. We actually they've done a lot of work training depressives who have broken a lot of their depressive cycles much more successfully running than by taking drugs. It's true that it works. It is a very, very big mood enhancer. And when you finish a marathon, first of all, you have that overwhelming sense of having done the impossible. I mean, it really is impossible to go 26 miles. And then you say, I did that. But plus, the endorphins are really charging through your system. Hmm. They're the same ones, I think, that get a woman through childbirth. And then afterwards, you know, she's just euphoric. And of course, 4 days later, you're in the pits. But but basically, yeah, running does make you feel good.
Childbirth is something, isn't it? I mean, it's just this pain like you've never experienced in your life. Whoa! And then you do forget it, because obviously people have more than one child sometimes. All right, let's go to Jean in Wauwatosa. Hello, Jean.
Good morning, Kathleen, and to your guest. Hi.
Hi.
My question is about your mindset as you were going in and preparing for the Boston Marathon. Were you going in knowing this is against the rules for women, I'm going to do it anyway and prove them that this is a stupid rule, or what was your mindset?
Okay, perhaps you didn't hear the very beginning of the show, which was that my mindset was that I was going to go to Boston, and I was going to go because it was a reward from my coach. I proved to him that I could do the distance in practice, and I was just as high as a kite because I knew I could do it. I'd done 31 miles in practice. I wasn't going to show the world that women deserve to be here or anything like that. I was very proud of myself, and I was proud of being a woman, and I was happy to be there. But I wasn't there to prove anything. It wasn't until after the official attacked me that I knew I had to finish the race, no matter what, because if I didn't, nobody would believe that women could do that distance if I walked off the course. So despite the fact of the official attacking me, I went ahead and finished. Now, after that Boston, everything changed. From then on, myself and other women who were running really unfortunately had to run bearing the whole banner of the female sex, because everybody, you know, was still suspicious of women running distances. And it wasn't until 5 years after that were we allowed to be official as competitors in the Boston Marathon and have real numbers and pin them on and go and run. So that was a breakthrough year, and we're celebrating, in fact, the 40th anniversary of that this year. So my mindset in that first race was first joy, but then after that my mindset was finish the race, show that women are strong, you know, don't collapse, don't get sick, you know, be tough, which is hard because anything can happen in a marathon. By 1975, it was really interesting. By then, I was those standards, a world-class competitor. I trained very, very hard. And when I walked to the starting line in Boston that day, I said, I'm going to run the hell out of this race, because I thought I was going to win. And I ran a time that was third best, in fact, in the U.S. and sixth in the world. But I got beaten.
Wow.
I got beaten by a world record. A woman came from Germany who just blew me off the course. But that's okay. You know, that's okay. It's we at last were competitors. So it was a whole different mindset.
Isn't that something to be able to say about yourself? I am a world class competitor. World class.
You know what was interesting, though, is even when I ran that 2:51 at Boston in 1975. Was so good at the time, people were saying, oh, my God, that's fantastic. I said, you know, women should be running around 2:30. Well, of course, then I got laughed out of the room again, you know, like, oh, you got to be kidding me. Women can't run 2 hours and 30 minutes for a marathon. Of course, then Greta Weitz came along and ran under 2 hours and 30 minutes the New York City Marathon. So we need these role models. You know, we need these women to show the world what we can do. And, of course, now people are speculating not what women's limits are, but how far they will go.
Hmm.
And it's really interesting, this whole thing about, you know, I've been telling you about we have inherent potential in endurance and stamina. My old coach saying that after he woke up from the faint after our first really, really long run. It's true. Women are not, the best woman is not going to outrun the best man in the marathon distance, but she is from 100 miles on. And we're finding that women are really, really good when it gets to very long distances and even several days of running. And so, I mean, I know you're shaking your head saying, like, who in the world would ever want to do that? But they are doing that. And let's not forget, 45 years ago, people said, who would ever want to run a marathon?
Mm-hmm. couple Facebook messages I want to give to you. One from Lynn, who says, I got my teaching degree when I was in my 40s. My applications always asked what I could coach. Having graduated from high school in 1961, the answer was nothing. Big change.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And Kirsten, I wish there was more support for female athletes after high school and college. It would be made a priority to make those opportunities available. I love running, but I don't want to run only because solo sports are all that's available now that I'm in my 20s. Catherine, do you hear that a lot, that women lack team sports opportunities?
Well, not only here, but I mean, I see it everywhere. In my first book, I've written three books. My first book was Running and Walking for Women Over 40. And what I suggested in that book is what I'm going to say now is still, if those things are lacking, why don't you guys go out and create them? Okay. I actually live in New Zealand a number of months a year. And, cause my husband's a Kiwi, and there they have community women's soccer, field hockey, you know, basketball, netball, all these kinds of teams. And so, you know, instead of going bowling like we used to do after work or, you know, the bowling league, you know, these women have these different leagues so that they play sports as they, when they're in high school and things. And then they get together in their communities. And so it's one town versus another town. And I think that's fantastic. So we have women who have formed their jogging groups and then they form their running clubs. And they have their clubs and stuff, and they go to different races together. But how about forming a team?
Sure. Cassie in Appleton, hi.
Hi. I first of all wanted to thank the guest for everything that she's done for women runners. I myself am a runner. I'm an ultra runner, and I compete in events that are over 26 miles. And this last August, I had the opportunity to go out and run 100 miles in Leadville, Colorado, and finished.
See, what did I tell you?
There weren't a lot of women out there, but it was interesting because there was a bigger percentage of women finishers than there was men finishers. And I was just curious to ask the guest how far she thought women would go when it came to running the longer distances, because it seems like as we run longer, we are catching up to the men. And I just wanted her opinion on where she saw that part of the sport going.
Well, okay, I'm just going to repeat myself, and that is the best woman is not going to beat the best man in the marathon, but she is at 100 miles. And this race that you ran in Leadville, in case the audience doesn't know, it's really an incredibly difficult race. It's not only 100 miles, it's 100 miles at very high altitude.
Oh, my gosh,
over
can't imagine.
Extremely difficult mountain terrain. Okay, this is not on a road. This is like a trail. So, you know, you have to be packed out with your kit, your gear, your food, everything. It's just amazingly tough. So my congratulations to her. But what she has said is what we are going to be seeing in the future. Women are going to dominate in 100 miles and in arduous racing. And we're finding in endurance racing where there's a team, let's say, and they do a six-day race. And some of the teams now require three men, three women for a six-day race. The men push it for the first couple of days, but it's always the women that bring the team home. And the men will admit to this, and it's not just endurance. It has something to do with the ability to think while exhausted. And I always say, you know, you come home to six screaming kids, and if you don't murder them or yourself, there's a reason why you can think logically with all these other things going on and while you're totally exhausted. So I think there are amazing things we're going to be discovering in the next few years. Amazing things.
Now, Cassie, you have to tell me, because I can't imagine running 100 miles, why you would want to run 100 miles. What's wrong with 10? What's wrong with 26?
Well, I think it's like anything. You know, you start out with 2 miles and you think you're going to die, and then you decide, well, I'll run a 5K, and then you do that, and then you eventually get up to a marathon, and you look, I guess, at ways to challenge yourself and maybe find more things about yourself. And I was told 10 years ago that I wasn't meant to be a runner because I had some pretty serious injuries from running when I started, and so that was kind of motivation too to see what you could actually do. So I'm very inspired by the guest.
Mm. Well, we're inspired by you.
Kathleen, what she said is really important. She said, you find out things about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. really the secret. I mean, you know, the body never lies. The mind is amazing. When you're running, you say, I can do much more than I ever believed I can do. The mind expands. You take on incredible challenges. Mm. I mean, the capacity is astonishing. I always say this. You know, men have had the marathon distance for 2,500 years. Women have only had it for 50. And we've really only had, you know, 40 years of Title IX, let's say. So, and we've only had the Olympic Games for women, you know, for the distances for, what, 28 years.
Right.
So we are very new in what we're thinking. This isn't that women are better than men or men are better than women. We're different. We have different attributes. Men have speed and strength and power. Women have endurance, flexibility, stamina, and maybe even more patience. So the sports that come out in the next 50 years are going to be, for women, are going to be quite phenomenal. Maybe things that we can't quite think about even right now.
Cassie, thank you so much. I'm glad you were listening. That's quite a story. Catherine Switzer is our guest this hour. She was at the Boston Marathon 45 years ago, 1967, and she became the first woman to enter the Boston Marathon as an official participant. You've heard the remarkable story of what happened that day, and there are some days that really change our lives. It indeed did change her life, and she went on to really champion female athletes, runners all over the world, and was in many ways responsible for the marathon, women's marathon, being a part of the Olympics. She is a world-class athlete. She is a speaker. She's a runner. She's going to be announcing for, she's done this for many, many years, the Boston Marathon on Monday. And she's our guest this hour. And we're having a good time. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. You can also go to the email talk@wpr.org. You can also go to the Facebook, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're asking the question this hour, how far do you think women's sports have come in the last 45 years? More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Catherine Switzer, our guest, Bruce in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hi. I was just calling to say that my daughter is into adventure racing, and she's part of a 4-member team, and their races normally aren't in distance but in terms of hours, and they'll race for 24 hours straight or 35 hours straight or a 70-hour race even down in Florida. And they were in an adventure race here in Wisconsin last year, and in the distance, it was a 30-hour race, but they think they went somewhere around 120 miles in that time. So her stamina and endurance has never been in question. She's always been able to finish these races. And, in fact, they're ranked number one in the state of Florida right now as an adventure racing team.
And how old was she when she started all of this, Bruce?
She's 27 now, and she started about 5 years ago. So she was about 22 when she started.
Catherine.
No, Kathleen and Bruce, I mean, we're going to be hearing this again and again and again. It is, you know, phenomenal. We're just beginning to explore the capacities of what women can do in terms of endurance and stamina. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, these endurance races, adventure races over the mountains in New Zealand and environmental races around the world, and it is phenomenal. It is absolutely phenomenal. I think we're just looking at the tip of the iceberg right now. Mm-hmm. I think that the future of women's sport is going to be a combination of that endurance capability of, you know, really encompassing maybe many cities. And I think it's going to become a team thing. I also think that it's going to be great for men and women together because they can form teams together and take, you know, advantage of their unique attributes of strength and power and endurance and stamina, both sides of the coin there. Who knows? It's going to be phenomenal.
Mm. What's your running? Thanks, Bruce, for the call. What's your running life like now? How often do you run?
Well, I still run, you know, on paper every day.
Every day? Really?
Well, I don't run every day. I mean, there's always a reason why we can't get a workout in, you know, a couple times a week or something like that. But let's put it this way. I've been a regular runner for 53 years.
Wow,
which
Catherine.
Is amazing.
Yes. Yes.
And I have an interesting story about that, too. You know, I still run marathons, but I took a 32-year hiatus from the marathon itself. after running those first 35 marathons, which you mentioned, I, you know, had the opportunity to join Avon and create this global circuit. And I said, I'm not going to have time now to train for the marathon. And I'd won New York. I'd had a lot of accomplishments. I'd run my 251. I said, listen, I just can't maintain that level. And so now's a good time to just do shorter races and train regularly, but not do the marathon. So I, you know, knocked off for about 32 years of the marathon. Then I began meeting women who were beginning to run, as I said, at 60, 65, 70, et cetera. And they were fascinating to me. And I said to my husband, do you think I could get it back? And because he said, I don't know, because they've got new legs. You don't have new legs. You've got 53-year-old running legs.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I'm going to try. And I did. So cut a long story short, I trained my brains out again. But I took my time. I took 18 months to build up from a base of, let's say, and I could run 10 miles easily, but to run again, build the base so that I could run a marathon distance. And I was up to doing 4 and 5 hour training runs. And the first marathon I did, interestingly, hearing that from Bruce, was a off-road adventure marathon over the Southern Alps of New Zealand. And there were 28 river crossings. And I had to carry backpack and everything. And I did it. Absolutely did it, and not only won my age group, but you know, beat 2/3 of all the competitors. So it's amazing. Again, the capacity that some people who are listening to this program say, "Well, I used to be an athlete, but that was years ago. I can't get it back." Well, I think you can. I did, and they'll say, "Well, you kept up your base the whole time." Okay. So I did, but there are many people who have never done anything who are just starting at 70 and 75.
And it certainly doesn't just have to be running. It can be anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why actually running is pretty good for people, especially older people. It's a weight-bearing exercise. And when you do a weight-bearing exercise, when you're lifting weights, when you're running, when you're walking is really pretty much ideal. You tease the bones and they build back stronger so that you are actually helping to build bone mass and prevent osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm.
Swimming is wonderful. Bicycling is wonderful, but they are not weight-bearing exercises. They're great for cardiovascular. And so you need a combination of, let's say, walking, cycling, swimming, stretching, because fitness is cardiovascular, it's strength, and it is flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Joyce in Neenah. Hi, Joyce.
Hi, Kathleen. First, I just want to thank you for your show yesterday at the 9 o'clock hour. I won't get into it, but it just might change my life. But anyway, I'm 45, and in my 20s and 30s, I was having my children and often would just run when they were napping around my block, keep my house in sight, and then, you know, come back. And I really enjoyed it. Didn't have any pain in my, you know, feet and knees and hips. As I got older, though, I found that was a struggle. I mean, I was taking, you know, ibuprofen just to keep myself able to run.
Mm.
So then I switched to the treadmill. So you don't get the outside pavement workout, but I find the treadmill is softer on my joints, and I'm able to run on the treadmill. I just wondered what your guest would say about the difference of running outside as opposed to working out on the treadmill.
Sure. Okay, Catherine.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. I say, first of all, whatever works is good, all right? The other thing is treadmill for me would drive me crazy because it's you know, I find it very, very boring. But if I were injured and that's the only thing that worked, of course I would do that. What I find is, yes, get off the road because the pavement is very hard, jarring, and as you get older, you know, the joints get less liquidy, less fluid, and so there's a chance for more injury. But I go on exclusively on trails. I may run a marathon on the road because I have to, but basically I train now exclusively on dirt and trails, gravel, that kind of stuff. So that is really, really important. The other thing is there are other exercises that you need to do, and probably you do, but strength exercises that help keep joints in shape. As an example, everybody has complaints about having knee problems, but I do a serious regimen of wall squats where you sit up against the wall, build up the quadriceps, the thigh muscles, which actually help hold the knee in place and build the ligaments and the strength around the knee.
Thank you, Joyce, for the call. Well, darn, we're out of time. This went by in a hurry. Now that you've inspired absolutely everybody who's listening right now, and we're going for a nice brisk walk if we're not runners, are your books available right now so we can be further inspired, Catherine?
Yes, there's several ways. Books are available in bookstores, or you can come through my website, marathonwoman.com.
Marathonwoman.com.
Yep, that's easy to remember because that's okay. The title of the book, one of the books, Marathon Woman. I also have a shop, and there's a shop link on my website, shopmarathonwoman.com.
Okay.
And there's also shirts and necklaces. And what's fun is at the Boston Marathon, I'm launching a line of jewelry.
Well.
Yes, with I Declare Charms. And we're doing jewelry in honor of being fearless and celebrating our achievements in running.
Oh, Catherine, you never stop. Long may you run, huh?
Well, thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Catherine. Thank you very much.
Kathleen,
it was a great
hour. Great to talk to you all.
Catherine Switzer. And she's going to be broadcasting the Boston Marathon for the umpteenth time on Monday when it takes place. That's quite a story, isn't it? Quite a story. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for finding that story and securing the guest. It was good. And thanks to Brett Jaspers, who's now officially ended his first week with this program. Brett is our new producer. He arrived here from New York just this week and is just doing great. So thanks, Brett. Thanks, everybody, for your calls. Until Monday.